Director General of COFTA, COO of SALCAM, Secretary to the National Council of Provinces, Parliament and Government officials, distinguished guests. First of all, Chairperson, I must apologize for KZN. I got a message this morning that due to the problem of flight, they couldn't come to this workshop. So I apologize for that. It is an honor to welcome you all to this important joint workshop that brings together chairpersons of committees dealing with local government. The honor is great when one welcomes and opens a joint workshop that is organized under the able leadership of the Honorable Mr. M.H. Mkhobi, Chairperson of the Select Committee of Cooperative Governments and Traditional Affairs. I commend this committee for having organized such an important workshop. I'm confident that drawing from the collective wisdom of us all gathered here today, we will indeed rise to the occasion and confront honestly the challenges facing spheres of government in processing interventions in terms of Section 139 of the Constitution. My welcoming input will be confined to interventions. Honourable members, this workshop will indeed provide an opportunity for sharing of ideas and deliberations on the challenges encountered and to seek innovative ways to address the need to strengthen the application of Section 139 of the Constitution. The NCOP stands at the peak of the intergovernmental relations system by bringing together all three spheres of government in areas of policy deliberation and legislation. The NCOP has a crucial role to play in ensuring that the system of cooperative government works effectively in improving the lives of our people. The concept of cooperative government within our system of government provides an excellent example of the development of democracy that is founded on the principle of participation of the people. The managing role of provincial government in terms of municipalities is outlined in Section 139 of the Constitution and further complemented by various acts and other policy documents. Provinces monitor municipalities by determining whether a municipality meets its executive obligation in terms of legislation and how well it performs its duties. It is important to note that intervention is not a form of punishment, but should be seen as a form of assistance in cases where municipalities could not address a specific issue. Section 139 of the Constitution states that municipalities should maintain essential national standards or meet established minimum standards for the rendering of a service with the implication that an intervention by a province can occur only when the municipality fails to meet the minimum standards. The objective with intervention is to restore the functioning of a municipality, and the process of intervention should stop when that objective has been reached. Honourable members, it is difficult to determine to what extent national and provincial governments are successful with their monitoring and intervention roles in the various aspects of public and municipal administration. Issues such as lack of proper, clear, and recognizable process for monitoring and intervention, insufficient budget allocation for these processes, and the lack of proper consultation processes with stakeholders impede the development as well as intergovernmental relations. Honourable members, The role of the MCOP as a forum for legislative intergovernmental relations is to oversee the relationship among the spheres of government in a national public forum. Both national and provincial governments must support and strengthen the capacity of municipalities to manage their own affairs, to exercise their powers, and to perform their functions. Section 139 is about intervention by provincial government to local government. Again, critical in this process are regular reports by the executive to the NCOP. And it is important that this workshop takes forward all the important matters that will be raised. With these brief words, Chairperson, I want to welcome you to the workshop, confident that our deliberations will take us further towards a goal of working together to speed up effective service to the people. I thank you.
Thank you very much, House Chair. I believe that you have set a tone, and we have noted issues that will be part of the engagement. Once more, thank you very much for the presentation. We'll then go to the purpose and the objective of the meeting, which I'll handle. And once again, welcome, and welcome even those who have just arrived. You are welcome. I rise to talk in terms of Section 139 of the Constitution. As an integral part of the institutional framework for developmental local government, it is a necessary corrective measure when a municipality fails to govern and thus jeopardizes the enterprise of development. It is also an aspect of intergovernmental relations, and as such, it must be exercised within the spirit of cooperative governance, as outlined in Chapter 3 of the Constitution. Within each provincial government, intervention must be part of broad supervision, as alluded to by House Chairperson. The objective of the State Committee on Cooperative Governance and Transitional Affairs with regard to intervening in municipality is the need, which is important, is the need to find a balance between institutional integrity of local government on the one hand and the efficacy of intervention aimed at restoring service delivery on the other. One of the observations by the Select Committee with previous intervention conducted, which is very important, was the procedure followed by intervening provinces, which differed extensively. There is no homogeneous approach in terms of intervening provinces in this matter. Many of the interventions, in particular those that omitted Section 1391A directive, seems to be legally unsound and open to a constitutional challenge. I think this is one of the core things that we need to engage much as this city. The recent resolution of Overbeck District Municipality by the Western Cape Provincial Executive Council, which was overturned by Western High Court on the 13th October 2010, is a case in point. Judge Gordon said the province's decision to dissolve over the district municipality was squarely based on misconstruing the constitutional provision. This and other practical difficulties we have encountered clearly shows that there is a need for a recent legislation in Section 139, Subsection 8, and the need in the experience of the committee is urgent. The other is in Eastern Cape, where Nguma was also overturned by High Court. When you check in the context of the tomb, and if you can make a first general, you might find that most, if not half, might be open to constitutional challenge. And that was important, and this is one of the motivations why the state committee said there is a need for this workshop with provincial legislature. It should be borne in mind that when Section 139 intervention is not based on the failure of a municipality to fulfill one or more executive obligations, it is unlawful. It should be borne in mind that when a Section 139 intervention is not based on the failure of a municipality to fulfill one or more executive obligations, it is unlawful. Which implies that the obligation must be specifically defined and be ring-fenced if needs be. The fact that the Constitution speaks of the relevant obligation makes clear that the obligation must be identified. A general reference to the municipality's failure to fulfill its executive obligation will not suffice. Therefore, the purpose of the meeting should be, among others, to solicit ideas as submitted by Houston and opinions from the participants that will inform the envisaged legislation in Section 139, Subsection 8 of the Constitution, with the aim of ensuring uniform intervention application that will provide certainty for municipalities. Again, improve coordination and beneficial working relations on intervention oversight, with a view to promote the principles of cooperative governance and intergovernmental relations. Let me pause and try to clarify this point. The NGOP is required by law to act within a particular time frame and express a view. And in the Constitution, it is also said that when a notice is given to the NGOP, it must also be given to the provincial legislature. But on the part of provincial legislature, that part seems not to be that visible. Even though the provincial legislature does not have a reviewing power, but they must, we don't know as to whether the legislature committee does receive that notice, which implies that when the SOP goes there, as we used, we need to invite the relevant committee of provincial legislature to go with it. The municipality that is affected by the intervention. To ask the residents that, once we engage with the intervention, there will be certain things that the province must remain doing. And to us, it will assist in shaking down the decisions that are taken at that municipality that is under the intervention. But if provincial legislation are not passed, it is going to be difficult, one, to track decisions, two, to make oversight and hold executive accountable. One experience that I want to share with you. Hence, we wanted to feel that all provinces must be present. And as your field committee will go to the province in a particular municipality, a provincial legislator will send a provincial person for a relevant committee. But instead of seeing it from the same link book, at times we found that the provincial legislator member defend the executive authority instead of defending the legislature with the SOP. These are some of the aspects that compelled us to call this type of thing of a workshop. Precisely because parliament and legislators are one. They are to oversight in terms of the legislature that provides that power to them. But at times you find that a member of legislature defends the executive when it's not the obligation of the legislator to do that. And the need for improving our intergovernmental relations in that regard is urgent. Hence, these are some of the issues that we need to engage on. emphasize the need of ongoing monitoring and oversight of magistrates by the legislature's committee during local government in order for magistrates to be able to take corrective measures on time where potential challenges could be identified. This might assist if provincial legislatures are able to use 106 investigation legislation as the one that would be able to make the provincial executive to see a problem in time and to be able to give support. Even before you can go to the Constitution or to the Section 139 of Municipal Finance Management Act, that can ask in terms of building the relevant capacity that we're talking about. At times, Section 154 has been called from time to time, but to our experience, it's not fair to always call on that because that has many legislation that has been provided for. You have your Municipal Systems Act, your Municipal Structures Act, your Municipal Finance Management Act, and other pieces related to local government. The issue is how do we make oversight on those legislations through the relevant executive authorities that deal with cooperative governance. I think that's some way we are losing. We are seeing it somewhere there. Let me talk a few about the types of intervention. The provincial executive may intervene in a municipality if it cannot or does not fulfill an executive obligation in terms of the constitutional legislation. The intervention can consist of any appropriate step. Legally, that's where we lose cases. Because in most cases, any appropriate step for some provincial executive means dissolution or assuming executive obligation. That's where judges mostly are using that to say, do we really understand what we mean by any appropriate steps? And this can only be done if we, together, with our legal advice and whatever, try to approach an intervention before we can just use our own discretion. So these are the steps. The issue of a directive to the magistrate that describes the extent of the failure and the steps to be taken. When you use a directive, provincial executives must describe the extent of the failure. Once you discuss it and you conclude by the dissolution later within the particular processes, you might not be easily challenged. But if you don't, you'll be easily challenged. The assumption of responsibility of the relevant obligation, that is section 139.1b, and the dissolution of municipality. Regular intervention can be applied in response to a municipality's failure to perform, which is not only financial in nature. For example, problems related to mismanagement of councillors' conduct, a complete breakdown of relations with the community, example of problems that are not strictly financial in nature. If there is a plan, there might be regular intervention. Regular intervention may not necessarily take over or dissolution. It's part of the aspect of the support and strengthening. Because Section 154 talks of support and strengthening, which is ongoing, which is lifetime, which is part of cooperative relations. And therefore, it's important that we need to understand some of these things within that particular context. Specific governance issues such as failure of the council to meet or the failure to accept the outcome of an election can only be addressed through a regular intervention on the basis of Section 139.1, which talks of identifying and giving a directive. Financial intervention. In 2003, Section 139 of the Constitution was significantly amended to enable provinces to intervene in municipalities that are experiencing financial problems. The amendment provided the critical basis for the measure that Municipal Finance Management Act had. The Municipal Management Act specifically deals with finances, and Chapter 13 can't advise how a province should indeed deal with this matter. It also has what provincial discretionary intervention in it. This is something that could be daily, monthly, yearly, be applied within the context of support before we can even go to the dissolution part of it. The Municipal Finance Management Act identifies various types of financial troubles, each warranting a different form of intervention. The first refers to a general financial problem, mainly relating to inability of municipalities to meet their financial commitments. This is a discretionary intervention which may commence with a directive to a municipality to implement a financial recovery plan, failing which the council may, at the end, be dissolved. The second relates to the failure of municipality to adopt a budget or impose a revenue raising measure. Legislative instrument without the municipality, a legislative instrument without which municipality cannot function. As the source of the problem is the council's failure to adopt this legislative instrument, the mandatory intervention may lead to a dissolution at the end. The third refers to a crisis in a municipality financial affairs. As the problem is deep-seated, the solution is the directive to implement a financial rescue plan. And depending on the crisis, other measures which may include the dissolution of the council. Provinces are trying at some level to implement this. But in most cases, they are hamstrung by resources. You would find that the department and national level have got its own budget, and there are no what you call unforeseen budget, which simply implies once you can deal with Section 139, subsection 8, subsequently, it has to be accompanied by a particular resource that would help to deal with capacitating the municipality when they're under intervention in this regard. We've moved around the country. Municipalities are under Section 139, but less resources are provided, or no resources at all. I'll give an example with Eastern Cape. We just expanded River Lake Municipality, where the intervention is yielding results indeed. But the municipality does not have money. There is a need for over 20 million for that municipality to rise. Then whose fault is this? The intervention is there, administrators are there, the councillors and administrators are beginning to see each other, but there are no finances to take the plan forward and leave municipality to be stable and thereafter take the administrator out of that municipality. And that is very important. Maybe the department would need to take note of that one and investigate how to take the matter forward. Our recommendation was that we need all the stakeholders there, including the treasurer, precisely because we understand it is us who pass budget. We have never passed budget and others got intervention in it. And therefore can't blame but we are saying, let's use our leadership and make an assist. So we need all stakeholders in this regard. Where there is a need for intervention, if it is any detected, especially the municipality that are financial poor, the provincial executive really must make an effort to consult the national treasury or business or whoever can provide that resources. It's very much crucial to move municipality out of the intervention status. In terms of the provision of the council, the type of intervention has a specific time frame for compliance, as I said to the NCOP. If the notice does not come in time, there are certain provinces where major intervention and the notice disappears somewhere. If it does not reach the office of the chairperson, the notice is not in parliament. And it's very much important that a communication need to be held in that regard. so that no one would point fingers at any other person. Precisely because cooperative governance means that it's an obligation by law to cooperate. It's in the Constitution. It means it's an it's not a favor to anyone. Precisely because it's the Constitution. When the concept of cooperation comes, some of us think simply means that it will depend on my discretion. But in this chapter, chapter 3, while it is in the Constitution, it means, even though we may not take each other's vote, it's an obligation to cooperate. Maybe we need to see what mechanisms are there to make sure that all role players cooperate in this regard. We have intergovernmental structures also. So those are the structures of cooperation. It's an obligation. We need to go beyond that. What if a particular sphere doesn't cooperate and see what you can do? Again, what is important, when you apply this thing, we need a substantive reason. Substantive reasons are needed. And again, the provision's discretion must also be used appropriately. And in my view, the provincial discretionary intervention is so important because it gives the province the power, the capacity, and opportunity to build municipality within their own province. And if that could be exploited, that we may not have that problem. So the NCOP occupies a unique position in our constitutional setup. It is better positioned to harmonize the interests of different spheres of government in the spirit of cooperative governance. And remember, the major mandate of the OCP is to represent provinces. While permanent delegates represent their own provinces, but the sum total of delegates in the OCP is to represent the interests of the entire province. And part of the agenda of this meeting is to ensure that the interests of the entire province are enhanced and are represented. And therefore, this workshop should indeed end up with something tangible. We would want to see, going forward, an improvement in terms of this. We would want to see an envisaged legislation. I'm not sure, Elroy, if we can have a guideline within the stipulation of legislation on how do we take or how do we allow implementation of the intervention? That if that guideline is set up, then we'll be able to prevent the situation where a municipality is taking provincial executive from time to time to court. Precisely because, in terms of analysis, the two examples of Oduma in Eastern Cape and Western Cape, you know, set a tone. It says something must be done in order to prevent major things. And we are here as we're speaking now. Many of the interventions have been approved for the sake of philosophical and legislative development. Mm-hmm. And in future, we need to do things differently and adhere to the Constitution. Thank you very much. I'll then, in terms of the agenda, call up for the Honorable Chairperson of the House, M.J. Mashanko, to give an oversight role in promoting both cooperative governments and intergovernmental relations. You are honored.
Also recognize the House Chairperson, Honorable Makaza, I thought she was here. Or also recognize the secretary to the NCOP, Advocate Pindela, recognize all chairpersons of committees dealing with local government in the provincial legislature, and recognize all officials of SALGA who are here, and of course the Department of Cooperative Government, Government and Traditional Affairs. I see Elroy is here and others, which maybe I don't know, and recognize all members of Parliament who are in this house. I think this is a very interesting subject that the chairperson has called us to deliberate on today. Let me try to quickly make a few remarks also so that we can have time to debate on these issues. Many of you will recall that the National Council of Provinces strategic planning workshop in August last year, we collectively emphasized the need to coordinate and to cooperate. If you can remember that. We agreed on that and we endorsed it, that we need to coordinate and cooperate. And the Deputy President actually added his voice today, urging us to coordinate our work, especially when it comes to oversight, to avoid what he called in his own terms, oversight stamping. Now, I think that's very important and very relevant because of the two houses which are here and any many other bodies that are doing oversight there. Now, I'm very happy today that you are doing exactly what we said in that workshop, that without cooperation and without coordination, we all run the risk of not making the impact we want to make. Yet if we cooperate and coordinate our work, we will work together as one legislative sector. I heard you touching on that. People normally forget that we have a legislative sector. Now, a legislative sector is not just Parliament. You take all your nine legislatures, plus Parliament as a legislature, you put them together, it's a legislative sector. There's executive. Executive works together. Whether you are MEC down there or what, they work together with the national minister. Now, the legislative sector should actually be doing the same so that we are able to coordinate our work better. Now, let me just make a little comment while the provinces are here. Some provinces, you know, when they hear that we're coming down for this type of an oversight, there's a fear as if we'll come to take over their work. Immediately you think it like that, you think it was a negative aspect. The positive aspect is that we are a legislative center. And we have to work together in partnership to achieve and coordinate with us so that we achieve better results of what we want to see happen. Now, the National Council of Provinces is there, as the chairperson has said, to represent the interests of the provinces and to ensure, of course, that those interests are taken into account in the national sphere of government. This you all know, we've been repeating this for many years. Now, this means, what it really means, is that the NCOP serves as a vital link between the national and provincial sphere of government. That's all what it means. The NCOP serves as that link. There's no any other legislation that serves as a link. Now, therefore, the NCOP has a responsibility to ensure that the decisions that are taken at national level do not impact negatively on service delivery. That's our work. That's what we should be looking at. What we should be doing, that those decisions must not impact negatively. If the province takes a decision to intervene, it must not impact on the service delivery, but it must improve the service delivery on the ground. If the national government does intervene in the province also in terms of Section 100, it must not impact negatively on the delivery of services of the province, but it must be a positive step that actually tries to better the service delivery at the provincial level. But in order to do this, it is important to understand the interests of each province. Because you can't do that if you don't understand the interests of each province. And their interests are different. So we've got to know that, Chairperson. We've got to study that very carefully and understand what are the interests of these provinces. Now, permanent delegates are here in Parliament to represent the interests of the actual thing. I don't want to repeat too much of it. To represent first your individual province. That's very important. And secondly, collectively, we represent the 9 provinces. As such, there must be a strong relationship between their offices here and the provinces at home. That's very important. However, in my meetings with the Premier, when I go around the town, I get a sense that there is no good relationship, let's not say actually good, but lack of relationship between us and the province. Because when it's down there, you remember during the provincial week, we asked you to go and use your leadership in the provinces and share the ideas from the National Council of Provinces and let them also share their ideas and their views down there in the province. So that when we come to the National Council of Provinces, so we are well equipped about the problems or challenges that they are having and we are able to deal with them. An important dimension in how the NCOP is composed is in the provision of space of participation by local government. The Constitution provides for 10 part-time representatives designated by organized local government there to represent the different categories of municipalities in the NCOP, but may not vote. I think you know that in terms of the Constitution. However, in spite of their non-voting status, they participate fully in the proceedings of the NCOP, whether it be in committees or plenaries or other activities, so that they can be in a position to influence the decision. That is there. So that's critical, that's very important. Now, the issue that I want to raise, which I will come to it very quickly, is how do SARGA itself exercises this intervention and the power to influence the decision at the provincial level. I will come back now. Now, this arrangement makes NCOP a very unique one, because then we are able to have the 3 spheres of government actually in under one roof, as you all know, that we can have the national government and the provincial government and the local government under one roof to thrash out all the problems that we are faced with in order to coordinate our work, to cooperate better, and to make the service delivery be better on the ground. Now, in performing oversight, with a view of the promoting cooperative government and intergovernmental relations, the NCOP delegates should at all times keep in mind the following objectives. I just want to go to them quickly because I think they are important. To ascertain whether each sphere is playing its role accordingly. That's number one. That is carrying out its responsibility in line with its powers and functions. Number two, to ascertain whether there is no conflict. That's what we should be checking. Because this intervention comes at times because there are conflicts. Now, we must ascertain whether is there no conflict between the interests of a different sphere in respect of particular service delivery area that may compromise implementation. I have been just in the Free State here. You're not here. I was in Free State about 2-3 weeks back, preparing for the taking Parliament there. And I realized that there are quite a number of projects that the national government is actually doing there, but the municipality is not aware. How they got in to do those things, with whom, I don't know. But they managed to get the land, they managed to do that, and they managed to do the project. Now, these are some of the things that we're talking about. Because that cooperation must be there. And it's very important because a local government is a sphere of government. To ascertain whether decisions at national level or nationally driven programs serve to advance plans and provincial municipality level or are informed by them. For instance, national programs must be informed by integrated development plans, which are informed by the direct needs of the people. Remember, there are these IDPs down on the ground. Now, when we come up there, whether we're province or national, the first thing I would do, I would look at the IDP of those municipalities, whether it be a district or local, and then say, what are their priorities? because I want to assist, and then discuss with them, and then get into the priorities of the ITP and then assist in whatever I want to assist. Now that's critical to me. We need to ensure that where there are conflicts related to service deliveries between the provincial and local government, that these are resolved within the spirit and letter of the Constitution in this regard. The Constitution states that an organ of state involved in an intergovernmental dispute must make every reasonable effort to settle the dispute by means of a mechanism and procedures provided for that purpose, and must exhaust all the remedies before it approaches court to resolve the dispute. To go to court is the last resort. It's actually not necessary if we coordinate better and we find all these mechanisms to discuss among ourselves. Now, to ascertain, another thing is to ascertain whether there is cooperation in the provision of service to the people in order to avoid each sphere of government working alone, yet the implication of this service may impact on the sphere of another government. Now, that's what I've been saying that I've seen in some of the provinces as I travel around. If we approach our oversight way, work in this way, we would promoting cooperative governance and intergovernmental relations. Now, let's just quickly look at the provinces. I was talking about that oversight by the NCOP. Now, let's look at the provinces quickly. Now, the provincial legislature, when we come to that, once get a sense that the engagement at provincial level may benefit significantly from the infusion of the views of local government. That's the sense I'm getting. Therefore, provincial legislatures need to create space for involving the provincial executive of the South African government, local government association, that is SAGA, in their deliberation. And also, the provincial leadership of SAGA must take advantage of the space being created by the provincial legislature. In this way, SAGA could influence decisions making at the provincial level also, not just at NCOP. This could influence the content of the negotiation matters that informed deliberation in the NCOP. If not happy that their views are accommodated, then SAGA has a second opportunity to petition the House, that is the NCOP, especially at committee level, to take into account its views. Now that space, I think, is very important. Some of the provinces don't give space to SAGA to participate. Well, the Constitution doesn't say so. I'm just saying, In a view of cooperation, it's possible that you can create that space outside the Constitution, whether you create it as an informal meeting to discuss together, or you can make it, put it in your rules, like Gauteng, I think, has done, that they allow SAGA to participate in their committees, whatever the case may be. But we can find a mechanism so that when these things, particularly on 76 legislation, when they are dealt with, and these mandates when are negotiated, and all these interventions when are discussed, then SAGA can also participate at the provincial level, even if it participates in the NCOP. Now, of course, unlike with NCOP, you know that the Constitution does not provide for participation by organized local government in the provincial legislature, as I said. This is simply because local government is a sphere of its own. However, it does not mean that SAGA cannot participate in other proceedings of provincial legislation. Where both spheres are affected by national decision, there is space to influence this through the National Council of Provinces, which is an integral part of our national parliament. And parliament is the legislative authority of the national sphere of government. Therefore, working together, we can facilitate a process where oversight serves to enhance relationships among different spheres of government. You have touched the issues of finance, Chairperson. Let me also just go a little bit into it. Now, our laws facilitate this working relationship. For instance, Section 132.1b of the Municipal Finance Management Act states that all oversight reports on annual reports from the municipality council must be submitted to the provincial legislature. And the provincial legislature may deal with the report in accordance with its constitutional power. The Act also provides in Section 134 for an annual report to the plenary, to Parliament, I'm sorry, annual report to Parliament by a cabinet member responsible for local government on action taken by the local government MECs to address issues raised by Auditor General. I don't know how often these things are happening. You are dealing with it in the committee, but these are things that we should be checking on all the time, and we need to do this to ensure that these things are happening. We need to request these reports. I've been writing to different provinces, but these reports are not forthcoming. I think, like, this year I haven't got any. Last year I think I got one from the Northwest and the Eastern Cape. Now let me come to 139 itself, which is my last point that I want to talk about, the intervention. I agree with the observation of the Senate Committee that some of the interventions by provincial government in municipalities tend to be legally unsound. We have been involved in some of them, I know. And they actually open what we call a constitutional challenge. Now, without getting into detail on the legality of some of these interventions, the courts have been brought into the fore, for an example, just to give you an example, in Mkuma Local Municipality versus MEC for Local Government in Eastern Cape. I'm sure you'll remember that case. And Cocktail as well. And more recently, the Overberg District Municipality versus MEC for Local Government in the Western Cape. I'm just giving those two. Now, I have said earlier, that should be the last resort. Now, let's ask ourselves the question, what has happened? Why did we have to go to court? Why couldn't we resolve this issue by way of cooperation and coordinating better in discussing this issue? Surely there was something wrong. And we need to find out what was wrong. I don't know. Why did we have to go to court? Now let us remember that the Constitution expects each sphere to avoid taking the other sphere to court. It actually does. This is a very important principle. Otherwise, all the other principles of cooperative government and intergovernmental relations would be undermined. This means that when one sphere takes another sphere to court, it must be for the last resort. That's what the committee should know and the members should know. Now, perhaps we need to ask ourselves a question. And the question I want to put to you today is this one. I don't have an answer myself. I'll give what I think is correct. But I think we can answer that in our deliberation. The question is, what was the intention behind the provision of the Constitution, which permits one sphere of government to intervene in another sphere of government? What was the intention? You know that national government can intervene in provincial government. That's Section 100 of the Constitution. And we know that the provincial sphere of government can intervene into local government spheres as one, Section 139 of the Constitution. What was the intention of this? I'm putting that question. We need to address that. Now, I do not know the answer, as I said, but my simple answer is this one. I think it was to make sure that the failure of one sphere of government does not compromise the delivery of services to the people. This is what I think. But I may get different answers from the floor. To me, this is the guiding philosophy behind any intervention. Interventions must serve the interests of the people. Once they serve other interests, there is a problem. As I said earlier, always an intervention must serve the interests of the people. Otherwise, if it begins to serve other interests, then we'll find the problem of running to the court and trying to go and find the solution. Also, we must not forget that Section 154, as you addressed the chair, as one of the constitutions, provides that the national and provincial government, by legislation and other means, can also guide to that and deal with it. We have already said that the laws are there. All what we need to do, we need to find the way in order to play our oversight or preferences. in terms of those laws which are already there. So the first question that the NCOP as an oversight body must ask, whether it receives a notice of intervention from a province, is what did the national government and a particular provincial government do to help the municipality in question as required by Section 41 of the Constitution? Given all the laws that we have, what did the two spheres do to assist that particular municipality? The answer to this question will help us to comprehensively and logically deal with the intervention. But if we do not understand what has the other two spheres done to assist that particular municipality, then we'll still be confused. In other words, we're leaving those municipalities to fend for themselves, whereas the two other spheres in terms of the Constitution are required to offer also assistance so that those local municipalities don't get into problems. Chairperson, you are aware that we have now tried to assist you by creating actually a position in the NCOP that will specifically deal with cooperative government and the intergovernmental relations. And the House Chair in charge of that is Mama Kana. He's going to work very closely with you because we are serious about this issue and we want to see that it's happening and we want to see that it is done. Now, your committees are very critical in bringing forth the challenges relating to cooperative government and intergovernmental relations and raising them to the level of leadership of the NCOP and the House in order for solutions to be found. In this regard, I would like to invite you, under the leadership of the Select Committee, all of you, in the NCOP, to develop a critical analysis of the implementation of Section 139 intervention since the establishment of the NCOP. Now, the analysis must consider the following issues. One, common factors that contribute to the intervention. What are they? We need to make a research on that one. What are the common factors that contribute to this intervention? Two, the challenges of this intervention, whether they be legal, procedural, or political, that have been experienced due to the implementation of 139 of the Constitution. Three, support provided by both provincial and national government to a municipality before and after its intervention, as he has said. Because it doesn't matter that we intervene, but we don't go back and see what is the intervention achieved. It's very important to monitor that and make sure that the implementation takes place and that the provincial government go out as quickly as possible and the municipality status then can be on a sound footing again and do its work. And lastly, any other relevant or related matter that you can think of, I think it will be very important. I would also be happy if the outcome of this analysis could assist us to develop, one, any warning mechanism with respect to the intervention. Because I think we need to do that. We must be in a position to see that there's a possible intervention that is coming here. What can we do in order to intervene before even we go to the intervention? Two, we need to advise on how best to deal with the factors that commonly lead to the implementation of Section 139 of the Constitution. And lastly, the strategic role of the NCOP can play in ensuring that challenges relating to service delivery are resolved in a manner that fosters friendly relationships. With these few words, Chairperson, let me come to the closing and say, we are contemplating hosting a round table on cooperative government and intergovernmental relations next year. This will be an opportunity to reflect on what we have done as the NCOP to support adherence to the principle of cooperative government and intergovernmental relations. I would be happy if the report on the analysis of the implementation of Section 139 of the Constitution, which I'm proposing, could be part of the agenda for the round table. I will leave it to this workshop to decide on the matter, and I thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. Thank you.
Let me welcome Chairperson of Portfolio Committee on Cooperative Governance and Traditional Leaders, Honorable Chesa, with your delegation from National Assembly. You are heartily welcome, and in essence, you are supposed to be co-chairing with me. You can come and occupy your space. Are you okay? Thank you. We have advanced a bit, but you still have to make contributions together as we discuss. We have not yet discussed anything.
Apologies, Chairperson. We just needed to pass through a report which we couldn't postpone. We apologize for that. Thank you.
Welcome. I think I'll take advantage because it's not yet 11. Call upon Salka to make a presentation. I apologize. Let me call upon the fellow parent, the Zupi, Advocate M.E. Pinero. Make a presentation. Thank you very much, and I apologize for the overnight.
Thank you, Chairperson to the National Council of Provinces, honorable members. Perhaps you were correct, Chair, in not calling upon me to make a presentation. After listening to your presentation as well as to the presentation by the Chairperson, it appears to me that the matter is being addressed. But I will, however, Chair, proceed with my presentation. I hope that I will make the provisions of Section 139 to appear as simple as I possibly can, because it appears to me that the interpretation of Section 139 sometimes leads different people to different conclusions. The interventions are located within the framework of the Constitution itself. In terms of the Constitution, the government in the Republic is constituted by national, provincial, and local spheres of government. And these spheres are distinctive, interrelated, and interdependent. Other than the functional areas of concurrent national and provincial competences, each has its area of competence. The Constitution enjoins the spheres to refrain from intruding into each other's terrain in the exercise of their powers and the performance of their functions. Despite their being distinctive, the Constitution authorizes provincial government to intervene in local government affairs within certain constraints. And the same applies insofar as the intervention in provincial affairs by national executive is concerned. I am sketching these constitutional provisions precisely because, in my view, interventions are located within intergovernmental relations. Intergovernmental relations, in my view, relate to the manner in which the three spheres of government exercises their power. The intervention, as it has already been indicated earlier on, is authorized by Section 139, and this is intervention in local sphere of government. So Section 139 describes the conditions, the preconditions for intervention. Firstly, the provincial executive must intervene in a manner and to the extent prescribed by the Constitution, and secondly, the provincial executive must give reasons why it intervenes in local government affairs. The question that arises, Chairperson, is whether the failure to conductively satisfy these procedural and substantive requirements fails to the intervention. In other words, if the provincial government intervenes in the local sphere of government, and does not comply with the same frame as outlined in the Constitution, will that render the intervention unconstitutional? Secondly, if there are no reasons, if the procedure has been followed, the correct procedure has been followed, but there are no reasons why the provincial sphere of government intervenes in the local sphere of government, will that be fatal to the intervention? In terms of section 139, the provincial executive may intervene if a municipality cannot or does not fulfill the executive obligation. And why I have emphasized the word may will appear later in my presentation, chapter 10. The obligations must be imposed by the constitution or legislation. The provincial executive may take appropriate steps to ensure the fulfillment of the obligation. My emphasis, once again, appropriate steps. Secondly, the appropriate steps may include, my emphasis once again, chapter 10, issuing a directive to the municipal council describing the extent of the failure to fulfill its obligations and taking steps required to fulfill those obligations. Secondly, assuming responsibility for the relevant obligations in the municipality to the extent required by the Constitution, or alternatively dissolving the municipal council and appointing an administrator until the election of a new council if this is warranted by exceptional circumstances. Once again, my emphasis on exceptional circumstances. The question that arises now is what constitutes executive obligation, because that is a precursor to the intervention. The meaning must be found within the context of the Constitution itself. The executive obligation must not be confused with statutory obligation. In other words, the obligations that are imposed by a statute must not be construed to mean executive obligation. The executive obligations may mean the following: the delivery of basic services and improvement of the lives of people, the development of policy and initiation of bylaws, the implementation and administration of legislation related to local government. Precisely because this is why the local government, this is why the sphere of local government has been created in terms of the constitution. These matters were dealt with in the case of Nguma local municipality and another, such as the Premier of the Eastern Cape Province and others. In that case also, the court found that the intervention was constitutionally unsound. And the requirements for intervention in terms of section 139(1)(a) and b, the power to intervene is clearly discretionary, as I've indicated earlier on. The provincial executive is authorized to intervene. So the intervention under section 139(1)(a) and b is not necessarily compulsory. Before the provincial executive intervenes, the above fact must have existed. That's the fact that I have referred to. Whether this fact exists is objectively determinable. In other words, the question that should be asked is whether the municipality has failed to carry out its executive obligation. There must be a rational connection between the intervention and the reasons proffered to validate it. In other words, the intervention must not be arbitrary. The intervention must be limited to the purpose for which it has been invoked. In other words, it must not travel beyond the constitutional permissible borders. An intervention that is irrational is bound to fail constitutional muster. In other words, if there are no reasons why the local sphere of government is being intervened into, that intervention is bound to be constitutionally unsound. In terms of section 139(1)(c), the dissolution of the municipality and appointment of an administrator must be warranted by exceptional circumstances. In other words, there should be existing exceptional circumstances why the municipal council has been dissolved. Once again, whether these circumstances exist is objectively determinable. Whether the exceptional circumstances exist. should be objectively determinable. The onus is therefore on the provincial executive to show the existence of exceptional circumstances. In the absence of the existence of exceptional circumstances, it may not be appropriate for the provincial executive to dissolve the municipal council. An intervention authorized by section 139, subsection 4. The municipality must have failed to fulfill a constitutional or legislative obligation. One, to approve a budget or any revenue-raising measures. The measures must be necessary to give effect to the budget. The provincial executive must intervene by taking any appropriate steps to ensure the approval of the budget or revenue-raising measures. The appropriate steps may include the dissolution of the municipal council. If the council is dissolved, the provincial executive must appoint an administrator and approve a temporary budget or revenue-raising measure necessary for the continued functioning of the municipality. Under Section 139, Subsection 4, unlike under Section 139, Subsection 1, the intervention is compulsory, but the dissolution of the municipality or the municipal council is not the only consideration. So the dissolution is not necessarily compulsory. Dissolution must be considered as a last resort. Once again, Chairperson, the question is whether the municipality has failed to approve a revenue or a budget or revenue raising measures, and whether the dissolution is an appropriate step, are objectively determinable. I refer to you, Chairperson, to the case of Over the District Municipality and others, versus the Premier of the Western Cape and others, where the provincial government took a decision to dissolve the Overberg District Municipality, and the court found that the dissolution was not the only appropriate measure that should have been taken in the circumstances. The requirement for intervention in terms of Section 139, Subsection 5, the municipality must be in serious or persistent breach, in serious or persistent material breach of its obligations to provide basic services or meet its financial commitments or admit that it is unable to meet the above. It appears to me that if the breach is not serious, if the breach is not persistent, and if the breach is not material, then the intervention may not be constitutionally sound. Then under those circumstances, the provincial executive must intervene by imposing a recovery plan aimed at assisting the municipality to meet its own obligations and dissolving the municipality, the municipal council, provided it fails to approve legislative measures, including the budget or any revenue-raising measures necessary to give effect to the recovery plan. Once again, Chairperson, one would note that the dissolution is only appropriate in circumstances if the municipal council fails to approve legislative measures, including the budget or any revenue-raising measures necessary to give effect to the recovery plan. The interventions in terms of Section 139, Subsection 7, those are instances where the provincial executive fails to intervene in terms of Section 139, Subsection 4 or Subsection 5. Those kind of interventions attract, or that failure attracts the intervention by the national executive. So in other words, if the provincial executive fails to intervene under Section 139, Subsection 4 or Subsection 5, then the national executive must intervene. The time frames relating to interventions, these time frames are important particularly for the National Council of Provinces. If the provincial executive intervenes in terms of Section 139.1b, it must submit a written notice of intervention to the cabinet member responsible for local government affairs, the relevant provincial legislature, and the National Council of Provinces within 14 days after the intervention began. The intervention must act and either if the cabinet member responsible for local government affairs disapproves or omits to approve the intervention within 28 days after it has begun, or the National Council of Provinces disapproves or omits to approve the intervention within 180 days after it has begun. As I have indicated, Chair, these days, these time frames have a particular meaning to the National Council of Provinces. If the provincial executive dissolves the municipal council in terms of Section 139(1)(c), it must immediately submit the notice of dissolution to the cabinet member responsible for local government affairs, the relevant provincial legislature, and the National Council of Provinces. Dissolution takes effect within 14 days from the day of receipt of notice by the National Council of Provinces, and it comes to an end if the cabinet member or the National Council of Provinces approves it before the expiry of 14 days. One would realize that the more serious the intervention becomes, the lesser the time frame for the approval or the disapproval of the intervention becomes. If the provincial executive intervenes in a municipality in terms of Section 139, Subsection 4 or Subsection 5, it must submit a notice of the intervention to the cabinet member responsible for local government affairs, the relevant provincial legislature, and the National Council of Provinces within 7 days of the intervention. In conclusion, Chairperson, it appears to me that the intervention is remedial in nature. It must be intended to assist the municipality to carry out its own obligation. So the intention is not that the intervention must last forever, but it must be intended to achieve a particular purpose. Once that purpose has been achieved, then the intervention must end. But perhaps coming to the role that the National Council of Provinces must play in processing the intervention, once the National Council of Provinces receives an intervention, it appears to me that the National Council of Provinces must then look at the provisions of the Constitution and ask itself the questions that the Section 139 raises. The first question should be whether is there any reason why the provincial executive intervenes in the local sphere of government. If there is no reason why the provincial executive intervenes in the local sphere of government, then it appears to me that the National Council of Provinces should take a decision to disapprove that intervention. Secondly, the National Council of Provinces should ask itself as to whether the provincial executive has complied with the time frame as set out in the Constitution. As I have indicated, the question is whether if the provincial executive fails to submit the intervention as provided for in terms of the Constitution, within the time frame provided for in the Constitution, whether that intervention would be constitutionally unsound. There might be reasons, there might be circumstances where the intervention is submitted, the notice of intervention is submitted to the National Council of Provinces after the expiry of the set time frame. But there might be reasons why the provincial sphere of government would want to intervene in the local sphere of government. So perhaps under those circumstances, the National Council of Provinces may look at the balancing effect and say whether the procedural aspect should be trumped by the substantive aspect. The substantive aspect obviously would refer to the reason why there should be an intervention, and the procedural aspect would obviously refer to whether the procedure in intervening in the local sphere of government was followed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, due to other post-pressing matters, we may not break for tea, but I will allow members to quietly, if there is tea, to quietly take a cup and come back while we proceed. That is the advantage of being a chair. You are allowed to quietly, but not in mass, just You just. I'll tell you,
Are we going to run through all the presentations before interaction, or can we interrogate the presentations as they come along? What is your...
Let's follow the agenda. The agenda directly. We interrogate everything. I think members are noting. So that works. Can Sanka come? Oh.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to myself and the co-chair, Father Mr. Rollins, the Chairperson of the MAOP, the members of both the Portfolio and Select Committees, Parliament, as well as members of the Provincial Legislature that are present, our DG, the Harbour Africa. Secretary of Parliament, colleagues, good morning. Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity that has been given to us as SAUGA to, as requested, speak around our role with respect to Section 139 and the impact thereof on municipalities. We certainly think that it's a useful discussion. And we really hope that it will certainly give rise to, if not a framework, some uniform guidance on how we should approach the issue of intervention, if at all necessary. The presentation, Chairperson, I'm told, is in the fact of members, and therefore there are quite a few slides. For the benefit of time, I will not run through each of them individually. But members will have the benefit of having the entire presentation in their possession. There are four key areas, in fact five, with some concluding remarks that we would cover. And really what we are attempting to do with part one and part two is, as you've indicated in your introductory remarks, Chairperson, there needs to be a uniform way of approaching interventions. I think as SAUGA, we also want a uniform understanding of our role, and that's what part one and part two really covers. Part three and four will really go into the detail on what we think are the critical factors influencing municipalities, and then lastly also what are our own analysis on some of the interventions that we have seen in municipalities, and we will conclude with some proposals on the way forward. Perhaps to start off on organized local government, really I'll be brief here. The concept of organized local government is really informed by the fact that as a sphere of government with 283 municipalities, to be able to effectively participate in what has been referred to this morning as cooperative governance and in the IGR space, we need to do so as a collective, as a sphere of government, and as such, that collective is driven through a vehicle called Organized Local Government. We're also very fortunate, out of very few democracies, that particular principle is entrenched in the Constitution. And as Organized Local Government, we are really representing, looking into representing municipalities by articulating their interests and seeking towards the coordinate their policies and programs. The framework itself is informed, the policy environment is informed by the Constitution, the Organized Local Government Act, the Systems Act, and the IGR Framework Act. Essentially, those four jointly provide for the structure of organized local government, but also its mandate and some of the key functions that would inform that mandate. And I will not run through that with the understanding that members are quite aware of what SAUGA is about. We established in 1996 through the Act of Recognition by the Minister in 1997, in January, in the Gazette. We do not have, contrary to perceptions out there, we do not have any executive authority over municipalities. our power over municipalities stems from our constitution as an organization. We Schedule 3 a public entity, and for us to be to play that strong and effective role as organized local government, we need to ensure that that everything we do should be to strengthen the sphere of government to enable it to pursue its developmental agenda. And there are quite a few areas that we've looked at, which appears at the bottom of the slide. I'm not going to run through that. This slide really just reflects the structure of the organization. Again, I will not run through that. Our mandate as an organization, really fivefold, key to that is the representation role, to promote and protect the interests of local government, to assist in the transformation of the sphere of local government, to raise the profile of our municipalities, to also perform the role as an employer body, something that we become quite popular for at a given time of the year, like we've experienced earlier this year in April and May. And then also very key to our mandate is to play the role of developing capacities within municipalities. Now, looking at that mandate, we have carved out four key functions in line with the mandate: the advisor support role, representation role, to act as an employer body, and to also play a key role around strategic profiling. This slide really just reflects, in a summarized version, our four key areas of focus. That slide, again, I will not run through, but really come to this detail. The Secretary of Parliament, in his presentation, covered to the extent how we are structured as government, as reflected in this particular slide. We have the three spheres where we can clearly see the separation at the national and provincial level between the executive arm and the legislative arm, and at the local level, where both those functions, the legislative and the executive function, lies within the municipal council itself. The three spheres, again, emphasis is on distinctive, interdependent, and interrelated. But what has become very critically within that arrangement is that there needs to be respect for the constitutional status of each of those three spheres. There needs to be respect for the non-encroachment on the geographical, functional, or institutional integrity of each of those spheres. And Section 139, as relates to local government, as relates to provincial government, is Section 100. It allows an opportunity for either national or provincial government to, where there is enough merit, in our view, to intervene with the view to assist in the national or provincial or local government. This slide, Jefferson, is quite critical because it reflects on some of the factors from where we sit as organized local government, as federal government. Some of the factors are really influencing municipalities. On the left of the slide is the external factors. On the right of the slide is the internal factors. And to reflect on the external factors, we can see there are three key factors: demographic patterns and trends. Here we're referring to in-migration, household growth, rural-urban migration, the growth of informal settlement, farm eviction, some of the factors that are influencing our municipalities, the macro and micro economic factors, unemployment as was raised earlier, revenue base declining within our municipalities, tax evasion by businesses as well as foreigners. What has been spoken much about this morning is the IGR component, weaknesses in both our policy as well as regulatory frameworks, fragmented support that is given to our municipalities, poor oversight, and very critically, unfunded mandates. Internal factors, some that we must take blame for ourselves as a sphere, as individual municipalities, is the political management and stability within our municipalities, the inter-political conflict, the limited ability to develop and enforce bylaws, professional administration and management. Thalga, we had a conference earlier in September where we did a discussion around how do we approach professionalism within the sector. As we're currently sitting with a lack of skilled staff, unqualified staff, appointments that are made that are inappropriate, and conflict of interest that we find. Financial mismanagement is another internal factor that influences how municipalities operate, as well as accountability from the perspective that there are poor mechanisms of community consultation and feedback, and award committees as a critical element of public participation is poorly resourced. So much of this, of these factors, really influences our municipalities on a daily basis. Now, looking at the context of intervention, local government has been given a very broad and more so very challenging set of responsibilities. Effective performance against the constitutional mandate really requires a coherent and coordinated set of support, which should come from both provincial and national government. What we have seen is that provincial interventions in our municipalities is a critical aspect of intergovernmental relations. But as you have said, Chairperson, in your introductory remarks, it should be within the spirit of cooperative governance. As a critical context is that the Constitution requires that provincial government must play a more meaningful role in monitoring and supporting municipalities as Section 155 of the Constitution. Now, looking at the interventions in our municipalities, while as the Secretary of Parliament has indicated, the ultimate purpose really, and the Chairperson of the NCOP posed it as a question, really, but what we are saying is that the ultimate Chairperson, if we're not directly responding to your question, we are saying the ultimate purpose of Section 139 should be really to assist municipalities to become sustainable and self-sufficient, and being able to do three critical things. The first one, really, to perform its functions as they've been assigned by the Constitution and other relevant legislation. Being able to raise the necessary revenue to conduct their daily affairs, and lastly, to ensure that short-term actions are aligned with medium to long-term planning. What we are saying is that there should be a broad agreement that both national and provincial governments should play a more active role and be committed to ensuring stabilization of municipalities, and that the interventions should really be exceptional and not be a regular occurrence as we have seen lately. Service delivery failures, the question is always, is interventions really a response to service delivery failures? While our own assessment indicates that if any, many of the interventions are not related to municipalities delivering services or the obligation to deliver services, and it's really informed by the lack of monitoring both at the provincial and national level, as well as the greater urgency of governance and administrative issues that we are finding within our municipalities. Very few of the interventions have been successful to the extent that they've been able to capacitate our municipalities such that we do not see a recurrence of the intervention like we have seen in the Eastern Cape. One municipality has gone under Section 139 three times, and clearly indicates that not enough has been done the first time around. As I've indicated, such an example is really the Butterworth case in the Eastern Cape. Some of the challenges that we have picked up, there are quite a few, as it relates to Section 139. Firstly, I've touched on this briefly earlier, the provinces really lack the capacity to monitor and support local government. Secondly, that some interventions could have been prevented if there were early warning systems, as outlined in the Systems Act, through 105 of the Systems Act, where it provides that the embassy should put in place mechanisms and processes that would really prevent intervention. We're also saying that the effectiveness of interventions are highly questionable, as they are, in our view, again, curative or simply takeovers without the necessary skills transfer. So as soon as the province leaves after an intervention, it's very likely that the municipality will again collapse. Well, coming back to the question that we've been asked is the role of SAUGA in intervention. While we, more than 10 years ago, recognized the need for a process that would look at uniformly approaching Section 139 across the country. We had a workshop in October 98, and there were some key outcomes of that workshop. It's outlined at the bottom of this slide. And in that workshop, which was attended by not only people within SAUGA but other spheres of government as well, including provincial and legislatures and the national legislature, we concluded in that workshop that there are six key areas to be looked into. The first one is to prior to interventions, there must be statutory recognition of the role and consultation with organized local government, in this case SAUGA. There must be an obligation to report regularly, not only to SAUGA but also to the provincial legislatures in terms of the standing committee. There's also a need to establish a permanent IGR structure at the provincial level, with a view to provide for consultation on key problems, terms of intervention, reporting mechanisms during the intervention, as well as looking at, into the critical point of appointing appropriate administrators where an intervention has given rise to the appointment of an administrator. Interventions, a very critical point, must be preceded by support by both provincial and national government to strengthen municipalities. And then, in line with the proposal you have made, Chairperson, in your remarks, is that there is a need for a regulatory framework to capacitate provinces to deal with interventions. And then also, lastly, a role on Council for SAUGA in drafting the required framework. Our analysis, really in line with what has already been presented, is that the data indicates that over the past 3 years, there has been an increase in the number of municipalities that have come under 139. The mechanisms, processes, and procedures in terms of Section 105 of the Systems Act have been overlooked, and there's an immediate move into the Section 106 investigation or in Section 139 intervention itself. And this really suggests that provinces are struggling with their constitutional commitment to support municipalities. Interventions have become a threat to the institutional integrity of municipalities, as we would have seen on the high court challenges recently, indicating that perhaps what informed the interventions were not what the Constitution allows for. We've also, through our analysis, picked up that there is a clear need to protect municipalities from interventions, such that they are allowed to play their constitutional role. As I said earlier, provinces should fulfill their statutory and constitutional obligations. Any intervention should be solution-orientated and seek to minimize encroaching on the institutional integrity of local government. And we are really suggesting three approaches to intervention. In the main, we are saying that the assumption of responsibility should be a measure of last resort, meaning a takeover of the municipality should really be a last resort in the process of provincial supervision. We should normally commence with the review, monitoring of the municipality, and steps to be followed to support and strengthen that municipality. Secondly, we are saying the integrity of the sphere of local government in exercising its original powers in terms of the constitution. Space should be given to municipalities to play that role, and they should be protected from interference, both provincially as well as nationally. And lastly, we are emphasizing the point that the aim of intervention should be restorative rather than punitive, as has become evident through quite a few of the interventions that we have seen recently. From an IGR point of view, some of this has already been picked up by previous presentations. There is little evidence that provincial legislatures are really exercising their oversight role. More targeted support and interventions required from provinces before we see a total collapse. Intervention should be, as I've indicated earlier, a last resort. The provincial executive must ensure that there is a sound exit strategy such that the municipality does not collapse after the administrator is removed. We're also saying, as it relates to our role, two key things we would want to appreciate from the NCOP. The first one is the creation of this new position. The chairperson, house chairperson in the NCOP for cooperative governance and intergovernmental relations, traditional affairs, whereas now we now have a platform through which we can raise issues, in addition to, as you highlighted earlier, chairperson of the NCOP, our 10 members within the NCOP. We are seriously looking at really improving our participation such that it becomes more meaningful within the NCOP. But we are also saying that as SALGA, we will continue to play our role around building the necessary capacity within our municipalities. And as the voice of local government, we continue to provide leadership and strategic guidance to our membership during intervention. We will also, through interaction and representation of our members, continue to engage the national legislative processes to ensure that the institutional integrity of local government is as well looked after. And as we are talking about possibly giving effect to Section 1398 of the Constitution by coming up with a national guide, whether through a guideline or through a piece of legislation, we would be quite keen on participating in such a process to ultimately protect our municipalities. The way forward, we have picked up chapters and section 1-3, well, section 3-4 of the Structures Act is now inconsistent with the Constitution and requires amendments. Section 3-4 still allows for a municipality to be dissolved should a section 1-3-9 not have worked. We feel that that is contrary to the intention of the improved section 1-3-9. Therefore, we need to revisit the Structures Act. We also say that there should be the incremental approach to Section 139 interventions should be encouraged as per the draft COXA guidelines, which we're hopefully going to get a presentation on. And there's also a need for a stronger IGR approach, and SALGA would want to play a more meaningful and perhaps also a more proactive role. And also encourage other municipalities in terms of our district municipalities also play a much proactive role as it relates to interventions within those districts where there are locals that have been put under Section 139. And very importantly also, there is a need for us to ensure that through the appointment of administrators within municipalities that are subject to 139, that such administrators are appropriately skilled and experienced. Chairperson, in conclusion, as SALGA, in light of the issues that were raised in the presentation, we are quite keen and supportive of a process that looks at a uniform approach to Section 139 across our provinces, across our municipalities, such that we can move away from the current fashion, which is
we are running to the High Court to solve our problems between the three spheres of government, and perhaps a common approach which everyone would have access to would assist in us clarifying ourselves before running to the court to assist us to fight our battle. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Counsel. Let me quickly call Voice Africa DJ the last presentation, and then we'll refresh our minds in discussion. Eric?
Oh. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to ask my colleague, Mr. Tsepo Kasi, to make the presentation. But let me really start off by thanking yourself, Honorable Mbobi, and for convening the workshop. We also want to acknowledge the presence of the chairperson of the NCLP, Honorable Mashangu, and also other important members here of the portfolio committee as well. And also the chairperson, House Chairperson, Dean of the Cost of Government. Chairperson, we have prepared quite a detailed presentation, and I want to say at the outset that I think all the presentations today collectively, in my view, cover most of the things that we have presented, but I would ask you as Chairperson to use your discretion when my colleague presents to indicate, you know, how we should summarize. But I think there are a number of aspects you are reflecting on that maybe have not been reflected on. So I just thought that you should assist us to manage that when we get there.
Maybe I would suggest that on issues of common ground, note that and just come with what is more of diversion from most of the presentations so that we're able to engage.
Okay, no, thanks. I can see. I will remind my colleague to do that. Chairperson, I just wanted to make three or four quick points before he comes on. The first point I wanted to make is that as the Department of Cooperative Governance, you know, we've really been reflecting on the practice of cooperative governance and intergovernmental relations in general. Now, the issue of intervention is a subset of our system of intergovernmental relations. And I think it's only important to note that a number of speakers have reflected on that system, because it's only within that context that we need to understand what is the role and place of interventions in our system of governance. I liked what I think it was the chairperson of the NCOP said when he spoke about intergovernmental relations. He said it is an obligation to cooperate. Why I'm saying that is important, because one of our observations of the last 15, 16 years, is that one of the weaknesses of our system has precisely been this element of voluntarism when it comes to the need to cooperate, and that has really destabilized in a number of different respects. The second point I quickly wanted to make is that we also concur completely with the speakers that talk about the importance of support and Section 164. In our view, you cannot talk about Section 139, Section 100, without talking about Section 154 of the Constitution. You need to talk about all of them in one breath. So for us, we would even go so far as to suggest that as we contemplate legislation going forward, we need to also find ways to strengthen the provisions that deal with support, monitoring, and early warning systems going forward, because that becomes, if you like, the precursor to avoiding, as Salgat also said, you know, where we find an intervention coming as a matter of a last resort. We would also maybe present a perspective, Chairperson, that says many of our interventions that we see in our municipalities result directly from failures within municipalities. We know that. But I think a more important point to make is that these interventions also result partially as a result of failures from national government and provincial government and SALGA to provide support. So in other words, we need to take collective responsibility when it comes to the conditions that lead to the intervention. My second last quick point I want to make here is that we have done an analysis as requested by the chairperson of the NCOP. This does not replace the task that was given to the select committee. And in our presentation, we will reflect on some of the weaknesses, the lessons, and some of the matters that we think need to be clarified in law and outside of law going further. But also in that analysis, we also reflect, which I think no one has done in any of the presentations, we reflect on the 2003 constitutional amendment, because important amendments were made there that also impact on the way in which Section 159 is applied. And again, I think we would really request that we collectively reflect on some of those lessons since 2003 as well. The final point I wanted to make, Chairperson, is that the department is currently preparing legislation on this. We didn't think it was opportune to present legislation, draft legislation in this meeting. So what we have simply done is to provide our analysis, is to highlight areas that we think need to receive attention in law. And obviously at the appropriate time, very soon, Chairperson, we will be coming back. We really welcome this particular engagement. So I'm going to hand over to Mr. Kasi, Tepo Kasi, and I don't know if you heard this, Mr. Kasi, the Chairperson was saying that let us not repeat many of the issues that were dealt with before. So let's just jump straight into the matters that we think we're adding value to the discussion. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Honorable MPs, this discussion is basically the subject matter could have not come at a better time. We as technocrats advising the executive chair, we have done some groundwork in terms of collecting as much information on the application of Section 139 of the Constitution as possible. And our presentation, as probably the DG has tried to allude to that, to say that it's based on the information collected. But then also what Honorable Masangu has said in regard to say what we need probably to look at is common effects contributing to the intervention, the challenges, the support, pre and post intervention that were done, and probably any other relevant issues that we might need to look at. Certainly, ours was probably both a desktop and going down to the municipalities and check the verification on of information that we've done. Certainly, I'm going directly to slide 7 because a lot of issues that were said by other colleagues and honourable members of Parliament have been covered, and I won't touch that. Why do we basically need such legislation? And you did indicate that there's no hegemony in the application of this particular Section 139 of the Constitution. Now, we are saying that we need this legislation on Section 139 to ensure a consistent approach to intervention. It will certainly, this legislation, complement what is contained in the Municipal Finance Management Act, to which Chapter 18 deals with subsection 4 and 5 of this particular section 139. And also this legislation will most certainly supersede other sector legislation that deals with section 139. There are many, a lot of them, Chair. And certainly it will bring some uniform intervention regime, which would provide certainty to for municipalities also to know what's in their right and what's not. Chairperson, we thought maybe we should share with you that since the advent of this particular provision of the Constitution, since 1998, when it was first invoked in the Northern Cape, 53 interventions were experienced all in all to date. And under the old section, there were 7 of them, 46 thereafter post 2003 intervention. And currently, as we speak, as of today, There are 21 interventions throughout the municipalities. And the next slide basically just provides you with a list of those municipalities, a number of interventions that were undertaken in the provinces or by the provinces. But you would realize the last one in Limpopo, there's nothing there. We have put that data on this chest. But on Limpopo, it's interesting, and the Gauteng one was just quite recent. It was within this year. When we engage with our colleagues in the Limpopo, they would tell you that what they normally do, they support the municipalities rather than go for this drastic invocation of this provision. So the issue of support, monitoring and support, is more crucial than to willy-nilly opt for intervening in the municipalities. And really, on the next slide, broadly, we have categorized the challenges, the nature of the problems experienced, their governance, financial and service delivery issues. Obviously, in governance, the political infighting, conflict between top management and councillors, and so on. On financial issues, issues such as fraud, misuse of municipal funds and property, lack of proper financial system, revenue collection, and auditor general's disclaimer issues, and so on. And on service delivery related to the functionaries of the municipalities as enshrined in the constitution. As the DG has alluded to the fact that there has been an the amendment to Section 139 in 2003, probably to try to strengthen the provisions of this particular section in how it was crafted initially. If we compare pre and post 2003, you will see that at the time, pre-1992, the provinces were required firstly to issue a directive. They didn't have a prerogative to take over the administration. Now, with the post 2003, the province can either issue a directive, they can take over the directly the administration of the municipality, and even for that matter, dissolve the municipality. Secondly, and I'll go quickly on them without wasting time because the presentation is before us, Chair, that no provision was made for the dissolution of council, and post 93. And the Secretary of NCOPS alluded to the issues around exceptional circumstances when the dissolution should be made or would be made. Certainly, there were no specific clauses dealing with municipalities failing on a financial executive obligation. That is to say, the subsection 4 and 5 of 139, they were not there before. There were no provisions made in the pre-2003 version to dissolve the municipal council if the budget was not approved, of which is the case now. The time frame between the minister and the NCOP to approve or disapprove were changed. And as I've alluded also, there was no provision dealing with subsection 4 and 5 of section 139 of the Constitution. Now, what were the major observations and key findings with this past experiences? And obviously, we had a lot around the issues of Numa and Overbeck cases. We are saying that the vast majority of the intervention were conducted in terms of Section 129B of the Constitution. No directive was issued, that's the second point. a lot of them, not directly for we should, or at least what we have, or the NCOP, what they have on their data, there were no, proof that a directive were issued. The intervention mechanism we are saying can also be used outside of the scenario of total collapse. The example there is Newcastle, wherein it invokes Section 139, but only for the purposes of taking the executive obligation of providing water to the community. The limitation of Section 139(1) to failure to fulfill an executive obligation led to difficulties in interpreting, especially when intervention is permitted and what steps are permitted. And I'll come to this issue again around the executive obligation. There is certainly uncertainty regarding the nature and requires intensity of intergovernmental checks and balances. And we know for the fact that the NCOP is doing a very good job within the time span of being given 180 days. They afford themselves a chance to go on the ground and check the validity of whether the interventions warrant the intervention itself. There was little indication in what we have in our data that provincial legislators exercise oversight over the provincial executive. And prior to 2003, the provincial legislature was specifically mentioned in terms of being given the role around the invocation of Section 139. We are saying the involvement of municipalities, it's not given that role to play around this intervention. And really, it becomes, somehow not giving justice for local municipalities not to be involved in the decisions, particularly, for instance, when a municipal council is being dissolved. Now, what are the key ideal factors that probably the legislation might look at? The legislation might basically look at the effective and immediate. Let me see. I jumped one slide. We are saying that intervention is a targeted response to a failure to fulfill obligations, whereby the most appropriate step is chosen out of a variety offered by Section 139. So we are saying Section 139 shouldn't be the only instrument to utilize when assisting the municipalities, but even monitoring and support should be the basis of that. There should be a clarity among all the stakeholders in regard to the legal basis of this drastic step. Provincial executives have due regard to intergovernmental checks and balances within and outside of Section 139. And we are saying provincial executives adopt an incremental approach as before, wherein they would issue a directive first. But we are not saying they shouldn't have that prerogative to go for taking over the administration or even dissolving the municipality. We are saying also that there should be a timely a submission of documentation to both the minister and the NCOP, because challenges of the minister approving getting notification after the intervention has been undertaken, and then we at times no information, much information has been supplied to the minister. Now the minister would need to go back and ask for more information and so on. And the 23 days period might last, and it will provide legal challenges in that regard. And we are saying the effective and immediate oversight over the actions of provincial executives should be exercised by the provincial important that the NQP does the fair and effective implementation of the interventions by means of an objective review and by means of useful recommendation to the provincial executive. And lastly, the role of the provincial executive or its representatives at the municipal level is clear for all the stakeholders. In fact, more so, we are saying also, Chair, that interventions are carried out with an intergovernmental approach, and that is very important. Further interventions are carried out with a strong focus on participation with the local communities, so that they are the people who are affected by the interventions themselves. And we are saying also the provincial executive must ensure that there is a sound exit strategy, as it was alluded in one or two of the presentations, that you know, we have to have some aftercare by the district, for instance, where applicable. Now, in terms of what we want to bring to the table, and the DG has alluded to the fact that we probably might be having a legislation on the table. The legislation, by and large, will deal with Section 100. When national government intervene in the provinces, it will also deal with this particular Section 9 that we, as a house, we are interested in. But more importantly also, it will deal with monitoring and support in terms of Section 154 and 155, subsection 6 of the Constitution, which deals with monitoring, of which 154 deals with the support issue. And by and large, the framework will deal with monitoring and support of municipalities. We've spoken really, I think many, a lot of participants here spoke about the need for early warning system. We need to embed this into some kind of legislation. Obviously, we will deal with provincial intervention in the municipalities, the national intervention in provinces. We deal with aspects of administrators in both provincial and municipal intervention. And there's a slide that I will talk about this administrators issue, which is problematic. Probably we deal with any other issues, such as the minister issuing out, you know, regulations around the implementation of this legislation. As I've indicated, Chair, by and large, there is a challenge around this issue of an executive obligation. The Constitution limits the intervention to the non-fulfillment of an executive obligation in terms of the Constitution and legislation. Now, this requires what you are saying, the intervening cabinet of provincial executive council to identify the statutory source of that executive obligation. In many instances, the reference to executive obligation in the documentation submitted to the NCOP and the minister are really incomplete in terms of what basically are they invoking the subsection 194. And the practice, I think, may render the intervention vulnerable to legal challenges, of which we have an overbag and examples in this regard. Now, what we are trying to say in the framework then, if you look, you can look at the last bullet there, that says we will try to confine the executive obligation outside of what is said in section 160 subsection 2 of the Constitution, wherein it is said that these three, mainly these three powers and functions, cannot be delegated by a municipal council. That is to say, the passing up, approving of the budget to pass revenue-raising measures and bylaws and provincial. So those are the things that probably might constitute by implication, the legislative competency or legislative functions of the council. Anything outside of this, then we are saying it can constitute to be a credit obligation, because really all the submissions that we had from provinces were very problematic in terms of how do we define this executive obligation. Then the next slide, Chair, deals with issues around support and monitoring of the provinces, the municipalities by the provinces, and by and large, it deals with issues aspects of Section 154 and 156 of the Constitution. And we are saying also, do we want to go back? And I would raise this up front to say, what we are going to do with this legislation, we are keeping it within the confines of the constitutional prescripts. There is an option that we can place before Parliament, both constitutional amendments to the Constitution, because there are still challenges around it. But probably the executive thinks that we should confine ourselves within the confines of the current prescript. So that's where we are waiting at our basis. Now, we are saying that probably we should look at a directive, as a precondition to instituting Section 139. But we are saying that should be encouraged rather than be something that can be put in legislation contrary to the Constitution. We've spoken about the 2003 amendment, and certainly there was no amendment to Section 100, which requires that the intervention should be at an incremental approach rather than discretionary or having a prerogative. We are saying also today the Section 139(1)(b) intervention is usually meant the deployment of an administrator who took over the affairs of the municipality. It should be noted that it is a subject of different interpretation whether Section 139(1)(b) allows for the appointment of the administrator, if you can look at the provision. The example that was given was that in Ngakamudiri, of which the court case was withdrawn, there was a challenge that Section 139(1)(b) doesn't talk about appointing an administrator. So the legislation in this regard must clarify this issue. We are saying also that the framework should provide for an appointment of the administrator even when invoking Section 109(1)(b). And we are saying this is not against the Constitution. Section 100 allows for the appointment of the administrator when assuming the municipality, the executive obligation in the province. Dissolution of provincial legislature and provincial legislative council are dealt probably with other sections within the constitution itself. And around the dissolution of issues is that dissolution of council can be done if exceptional circumstances warrant such a step. But probably we would need to define this exceptional cases. If I can jump this other slide and go directly to the one that deals with the roles of the cabinet member responsible for local government, and particularly the NCOP and the provincial legislators, is that it is suggested that the minister's review role should be specifically also defined to include procedural requirements such as issuing of a directive. And certainly even the NCOP's role should probably be strengthened in the application of Section 139. Determine if the cited reasons for an intervention are indeed executive obligations. Determine if there were any prior endeavors by the provincial executive to resolve the matter with the municipality, especially the monitoring and support issue. And the role probably of the minister regarding those two subsections, because the minister only provided a role of being informed, without, you know, having much broader roles in terms of approving, for instance, or disapproving of those financial issues and intervention. No role has been provided for the minister in that regard. I think my last slide, Chair, still is based on the issues that need to be clarified around the role of our minister and NCOP and the provincial legislature, in that the absence of specific provisions of Section 109 with regard to provincial legislature's oversight role seems to have led to the misguided conception that the provincial legislature hardly plays a role in this. And one of the we should remember that one of the provincial legislature's key functions is to exercise an oversight role over the provincial legislature itself. However, I did indicate, allude to the fact earlier on, Chair, to say that the previous pre-2003 provisions, certainly they specifically gave a provincial legislator a role to play around the interventions themselves. But I'm not too sure why they were taken out in the post 2002 provision. But then we are saying the framework then going forward should propose that there has to be a definite oversight role for the provincial legislature. Secondly, the duty on the provincial executive must be to finish the provincial legislature's the relevant information required in the intervention. And we are saying also the provincial legislature must assume probably a more role similar to the NCOP role, but it shouldn't be a duplication of functions, but how we can craft the different roles for different role players, it might need for us to look at that. When this are one or two of some of our recommendations, Chair, in that regard, I thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Delegate. We are to eat by 1 o'clock. Before you go there, you need to be hungry by engaging. You need to engage by that time. I think you'll be exhausted and fresh during lunch. This is the time of engagement. I think we've listened to all presentations, but more or less they are common. I'll start with the Honorable One, Honorable Chesa, Honorable Hood, Kunda, number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, in that order, please.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, I must say I welcome this workshop and the attentions to look again at the relevant legislation. I have a particular concern when it comes to the different parts of 139 dealing with dissolving a municipality. If you look at 139.1c, it clearly spells out when it can be done and then what must be done. For instance, advising the relevant cabinet minister, the legislature, and the NCLP within 14 days, advising them immediately that they must react within 14 days, I think it is. But if you come to 139.5, as a consequence of four. The only stipulation is that the NCOP, like the minister, has to be advised within 7 days. Now, in the case of the other intervention, the NCOP has to approve either within 14 days the dissolution of a council or 180 days the imposition of an administrator to take over, not the running of the council, as somebody said earlier on, but to take over the executive function. Because the council is still run by the council. It's just the executive function that are taken over. Now in those cases, the NCOP has time to approve or disapprove. But in the case of 1395, the 7 days is the only stipulation by which time the NCOP has to be advised, which I'm not sure is done correctly in any case, but nothing else. No sanction or imposition by the NCOP. Something that we need to look at very, very clearly, I think.
Thank you very much for good
Chairperson. I think I agree that the presentations were very helpful. Just to say that advocate the chief subcommittee from the portfolio committee. The chairperson, I was saying that I found the presentation useful. Advocate Pindela's presentation, although it was useful as a reminder of what the law says, I would have loved it to have been more evaluative of any other court decisions around this matter. Unless I'm mistaken, he did mention one of the cases, but it would have been very useful if there had been any other legal challenges that related to this area that we are looking at. And his conclusion, the two sentences of his conclusion, the first one should really be an intention. In other words, it can only be said after the fact whether the intervention was remedial. We can't state it as an upfront thing. It ought to be the result of an evaluation whether such intervention was indeed remedial as the law required. So that is what we thought we wanted to ensure. The second specific thing I want to say about the SALGA presentation, I liked it including the COCTA presentation. They are being evaluative. That work was done in the past to deal with the problems that arise from the nature of the evidence of the interventions. It provides the substance of what I'm saying when I say, in SALGA's view, those interventions have not been remedial. They've actually been a failure. So they did not succeed to become what the law intended. So that's a very useful evidence-based decision to build it on that basis. Although Joel raised what the workshop did early on, but he didn't talk about the manual that was subsequently developed as a guide to provinces for their intervention. Precisely lifting the necessity for support as a precursor for any other subsequent intervention that may be necessary. So, but the other thing is that Section 1.4 speaks about the necessity for support by legislative and other means. But there is no indication of how the provinces themselves, including national departments, I would suggest, and the district, by the way, which is required to support weaker municipalities, what capacities they need to be able to play that role. And in the absence of a definition of what support, what capacity they should have, I don't think any of them have actually sufficiently done that. Okay? So part of the failure, as the DG is saying correctly, that part of the failure at the municipal level is a reflection of the failure of the other spheres, including SALGA. So going forward, there's work that needs to be done to develop a framework that explains this is the sort of capacity each province needs to have if it is to play the supporting role to municipalities. and similarly the district if we want to do that. The cities network, which serves as a knowledge generator and advocacy research body for cities, existed also alongside the district, a district forum of sorts. It would be very interesting to go back to asking the question, should we be examining what support to weaker municipalities districts have played, if any, and what prevented them from doing so effectively, before we decide to abolish them? Which requires of us to have evidence, which would have to answer the question, when we created them and said we want them to do this, did we build capacity, both financial and add in other ways for them to be playing that role? Or in fact, we set them up to fail because we didn't make any provision for them to play that role. Chairperson, that's the one thing that I find very... in other words, we must reflect in an evaluative manner on what we said in the law, including in the policy, but whether we provided the substance for them to be able to play that role. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Ngunkosi Zweli Mandela in the Portfolio Committee.
I have three questions which really are based on the presentation done by the last speaker on page 5, slide 10. It sets out the problems experienced with their interventions. One is governance, one is financial, and the other is service delivery. On the issue of governance, they find that there has been political infighting, that they could be interpreted of being within a party or between parties. Can the department be able to furnish us with a list of these political infighting so we can better understand the problems and situations on the ground? I think it assists the Portfolio Committee and the NCOP when we do oversight to understand the issues better. On the issue of financial, one of the government's key priorities is to fight fraud and corruption. And they state here that the fraud and misuse of municipal funds was another problem experienced. My question then is, what has been the action implemented by the department? How many people have been arrested and prosecuted through their findings? Can we also get a list so that we understand what has been concluded on that? The last one, Chairperson, is on service delivery. As the ad hoc committee of service delivery, we went around the country doing public hearings and interacting with some of the municipalities. We came to experience that some of the challenges that impaired service delivery were the debt that was upon them, in that some other departments were not settling their debts. What has been the department's finding in that, and what have they done to assist those municipalities in ensuring that they are able to gain access to those funds? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, there was a four here, yes.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also say I welcome this workshop. It's a very important workshop. But, Chair, it makes me, I've been covered by previous speakers, it makes me to ask myself a lot of questions concerning particularly Salga's presentation. You look through Salga's presentation and you ask yourself a lot of questions. Salga says This is the mandate. Sagar says the mandate is to raise the profile of local government. Sagar says their mandate is to develop capacity within municipalities. We, when we do provincial week at the NCOP, and you go around, the leader of the delegation must always phone where Sagar. The other question on Sagar's mandate, Sagar says it's advice and to support. My question to Sagar then is, what advice and support did they give to the municipalities where intervention has been taken place? What did they do to prevent that intervention? The other thing is, Chair, that really it's in the Soviet presentation as well, the factors currently influencing municipalities, the internal factors, there's one that is said, the interpolitical conflicts, can they clarify that for us, what do we mean by that? And the other thing is that Sagar talks about the effectiveness of this municipality. Chair, from our experience as a member of this select committee on corporate governance, we had reports from certain municipalities in the Eastern Cape the other day. And particularly, I would like to refer to the one that you've also mentioned, that Sunbury, where the administrator has done a very, very important job, and the council is on its feet, but there are lack of finance. What role did Sagar play to assist that municipality so that skills can be transferred? Because that's one of Sagar's main complaints. Skills are not being transferred to certain municipalities and all that. The last question, Chair, everybody, I think the chairperson of the NGOP, the last time also emphasized it, is that we would like to see Sagar really participating and playing his role in all spheres of government where Sagar are needed, so that we can do justice to our people and that civil delivery can really take place. We can mention a lot of municipalities here today, but we don't want to mention the municipalities because we want Sagar to play their role. Yes, we must take responsibility where we have failed, but the intergovernmental relationships between national, provincial, and local is of utmost importance. But Sagar has also got a role to play there. So I would like Sagar to clarify that part. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'm Peter Smith from the Portfolio Committee. Yeah, Chair, I've got a couple of questions. I think they arise from different presentations. But the first thing that really struck me was the statistic that the department gave of 53 interventions and then the zero from Limpopo. Now, I'm not familiar with Limpopo's domestic politics, but it strikes me as quite surprising that there would not be a single intervention there, and every other province is 1, 2, 3, up to 11 or whatever. And I think it's not a question of the purpose practice I want to put before us, but whether it's an issue of the way we define interventions and so on. Because the statement was made that in the purpose, the argument comes that they give support rather than intervene. And then, you know, if one leaves it at that, that would give the suggestion, well, that obviously is the solution to the entire country's problem with interventions, because if you give support, you don't have to intervene, and the problem and the issue is over. We don't need to make anything else. But I just wanted to see if we could get a little bit more information on that, because I find that quite surprising. I mean, does it mean, for example, in Limpopo, that, because if you define intervention, it starts with directives right through to dissolution and everything in between. So the way I would read those steps is to say that in Limpopo, the provincial executive has not even issued a single directive since the Section 139 came into being. And if it has not even issued a single directive, okay, it's fine, hasn't dissolved anybody, hasn't issued an administration, but it hasn't even issued a directive, does that indicate that, in fact, it has been giving support, or that, in fact, maybe it's not been doing anything? I just find that as a very surprising statistic. And secondly, I'd like to know, in respect to that statistic, whether, you know, what the department has to say on the manner in which Section 139 needs to be employed consistently throughout the country. In other words, if one has regard to the statistics, you could take the view that, oh, province A is constantly in trouble and province B are very well behaved. But it doesn't mean that. It could well mean equally that the law is being applied differently. So province A has spent its life intervening where province B doesn't bother. It doesn't mean that the problems are not there, simply you're not using the same mechanisms to deal with it. So I wanted the department to be able to indicate to us, since they've done substantive research on Section 139 applications, what the view is of the consistent application of the law. And then, Chair, the issue of provincial support. I mean, this issue is really, it's astonishing that year after year nothing changes. Since 1994, this House, the National Assembly at least, and I should think the NCAP has been the same, has been bitching and moaning about the lack of provincial support for municipalities. It's been a theme like no other theme. And yet, last week, when the minister was in the portfolio committee and this issue was raised, he was open enough to say that not one province is there adequate support for municipalities. That across the board it's a disaster. Now, you know, we've had this municipal system of houses since 2000, and we're sitting here saying basically provincial support is a disastrous situation. So the question I put again to the department is, fine, you're going to introduce legislation dealing with Section 139. But if, as we all agree, Section 139 and provincial support are the flip side of each other, in other words, if you give decent support, you're not going to have to intervene, are you solving the problem by just putting legislation in place? Unless you deal with the issue of provincial support, you're only tackling half the problem. And nobody seems to be dealing with the issue of provincial support. Where have we found anything from the executive that says we're going to turn around provincial support and make it work? The first question I said I put there is whether the provinces have the resources to do it, or whether they are prepared to commit the resources to do it. There are provinces which have had moratoriums on employing staff in local governments for the last 10 years. If you go to most provinces, I don't know everyone, the NCAP guys would know, if you go to provinces, they're telling you we don't have the people or the skills to give support to local government. So what are we talking about strengthening Section 139? We're not talking about strengthening support. And then a second issue on support, Chair, is we've had Section 100. For the same amount of time we've had Section 139. Provinces have failed to support municipalities for the last decade. Why have we not considered applying Section 100 against provinces that fail to comply with their constitutional obligations in terms of Section 154? They are obliged to monitor and support, and they don't do so, but we don't consider applying Section 100 against them. But when a municipality gets out of line, bingo, 139, you nail them. We're not being consistent even there. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Before they respond, is there any other substantial questions so that we don't go to and from? Honorable Martina? Honorable Dan? Number two? Still have a question number three? Is that all?
Okay, let me start with one issue. I think I thought the purpose here was to bring all provinces together so that we find a common purpose around dealing with all this. The reality of the matter is, you might be correct, we took Parliament to Limpopo. The municipality that we went to was in a disaster. It was collapsing. But the reality of the matter is there's no consistent way of provinces, a common way of provinces dealing with those issues. Some provinces would want to hide what is happening within those specific provinces. And I thought that the purpose of us coming together here was to say, how do we find a way of provincial legislatures starting to do the oversight work in assisting this whole process to make sure that some of these issues are brought up so that we have a common way of making sure that provincial executives are able to can intervene into those specific problems. That's what I thought we came together to look at and deal with. Because the reality of the matter is, in terms of our own experience, the situation is bad outside there. When we went through all the interventions, it is clear that you know, you have all these problems, from political problems to financial mismanagement, corruption and everything else. But also, we must also find a way, because government is wasting a lot of money. You know, in most cases, we want to bring in forensic interventions to make sure that there are investigations. Those people will drag all those things to make sure that they get a lot of money out of government, while there are institutions within the state that can do that cheaper and more effectively. And our experience in these few days, these few months, was that when we just make sure that the hawks moves in, you know, a lot of people get arrested. You know, government spends less money in terms of this forensic investigations and all that, you see. And that's what we thought, when we come together, when we have a common approach, we are able to can then look at those specific issues and say, possibly there might be some regulations needed. Not necessarily the change of the entire legislation, needed to make sure that we have a common approach coming from the department itself, so that we assist to craft those regulations to assist that particular process. And I just wanted to bring that, so that we understand as to why are we here, what is it that we want to do. So that as legislators, we have a common approach in making sure that we hold executive accountable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I should also echo the appreciation for this report. Now, my question is, in page 5, slide 10, whereby category of nature of the problems experience are being shown. Number one in governance is political impact. When there is an intervention, I think the proper thing is when you intervene on a problem, at the end of the day, you wish when you go out, it should be, problem should be rectified. Now, I would like to know how do the intervention really help with the political impact? Are you just writing to be saying that it is political impact? You don't specifically outline the problem and how is the party, if it is a party thing or party things, been dealt with. Are you telling them that we are in this municipality and this the problem is political infight, so that the political parties must start to deal with the problem which really hampers service delivery? The last question, Chair. I may be not be aware, and pardon my ignorance, to be saying that at the end of the day, after the administrators are being there because of the Section 139, what happens to the municipal managers whom we think that at a certain stage, at most of the time, is because of lack of their leadership, management, skills, all those things. Thank you, Chairperson.
Just one point that has come up from the discussions after my input, and I was speaking my input to the Constitution itself, but to the actual practice of intervention. Somebody asked the question, is there a success rate? And I can tell you, colleagues, that this committee under the chair sitting there packs no punches. When we go out to visit the municipalities, we really pack no punches. We draw out the information and then we react and we make recommendations. My colleague Martina is there, mentioned the fact that we were, up to now, we found that the methods in which these things could be dragged out by Even the simple thing as laying a charge at the police station could be dragged out by coming up with answers that the wrong person laid the charge or the wrong institution. We're getting there, and we are now reacting much more vigorously in saying, as he said, get the whole thing to charge. And in fact, the chair can prepare a report stating how many of these successes we've had. But there have been successes. But the point is here, as an NCOP, we also need some muscle. Because we cannot react unless there is an intervention requesting our playing our part. The question was asked about, and I'm glad it came up, about Limpopo. And we've now had the response about the municipality visited in Sekhukhune. But I know for a fact that another municipality, and let me mention it, Bellavella in Limpopo, have not passed a budget for a number of years, and yet they carry on without anybody doing anything about it. Now, that is a lack of action by the provincial legislature or the MEC, responsible for local government. And we should have that muscle as has been stated by Peter Smith, saying that we must intervene in terms of Section 100. I think we need a comprehensive report, not only on what the legislation is, but also what the powers of the NCOP are in regard to intervention.
Thank you very much. I guess I'm going to allow presenters to respond. If there are any substantive questions that is out, I'm looking at the question of time and other engagement. But let them respond, maybe. I'll just have one or 2 minutes for follow up.
Oh,
thank you.
I'll take the 2 minutes follow up.
We can respond. Who starts? I would need the department to be the last. The chairperson is leaving, and we have allowed him. We're taking him for presentation. Can we present the rest of the department? Let me go according to. Yeah. I think there was no question in terms of welcome and purpose. And the purpose and objective, other than what do we do in terms of political parties, do we tell them or not? I think that one will come and respond later on. Can we get maybe Honorable Pindela, Honorable Savaka, and the department owners?
Yes, the question that came to me, I think, relates to whether there were other court challenges relating to intervention. I think that the two authoritative challenges currently are the Nguma local municipality, which I have referred to the judgment by Van Zyl J, and the Overberg district municipality, the judgment by Bozalek J. Those are the current authoritative interpretations so far as Section 139 is concerned. Secondly, Chair, the chairperson of the portfolio committee raised an issue about the slide, the last slide that I presented on conclusion, which had said intervention is remedial in nature. The second sentence says it must be intended to assist the municipality to carry out its own obligation. What I really meant there, Chair, is that the intention of the intervention is to remedy the situation and not to take over the municipality forever. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. Perhaps to add on to what Honorable Tinoli raised on court cases, it must have been 2 years ago, SAOGA did a quick and dirty assessment of some of the key outcomes of court cases. I'm sure we can make that available, perhaps updated with the more recent outcomes that we have seen. And we can make that available. I think many of the others were comments, and I will just respond to the direct questions to Salva, perhaps to start off with the question. question that was asked, what exactly if our role is to probe and what exactly has South Africa done specifically as it relates to intervention. The current weakness that we have in the system is that, and it's just unfortunate that I didn't add it to my presentation, because we have the information available. We have a presentation which indicates on the number of municipalities that have been intervened, what the reasons are, and in each of those cases, whether SAUGA has been consulted leading up to, during, and post the intervention. In none of those cases was SAUGA involved. So it's a system weakness, and that's why one of our ways forward is that whatever framework, whether it's legislation or otherwise, there must be a strong role for SAUGA to play, because we do feel that there is space for us to bring value add. Let me give an example. And let's use the latest case. It might be a bad case, but let's use the latest case of Overberg Municipality. Before the intervention, if one looks at the judgment in the Overberg case, it refers to three letters that the municipality sent, and the judge referred to those letters that gave rise to its outcome. As SAUGA, we drafted those letters ourselves for the municipality. So we have played the role. It is just that we are not like a hen. When it lays an egg, it makes a lot of noise. We are like the fish that lays 1,000 eggs, and we are quiet. And perhaps it's deliberate. But yes, we have played the role in that particular case. And yes, we are unfortunately didn't make noise. Again, we can use the same example on what are we talking about when we talk about intra-political infighting. In that municipality, what ultimately gave rise to the intervention is the fact that the council couldn't meet to approve a budget. And why couldn't the council meet? Because there were political problems in the municipality in terms of numbers. One coalition wanted to convene, the other didn't want to, the other part of council didn't want to. I think the detail is well presented in the judgment, because it's referred to. Skills transfer, what is our role during the interventions? As I said, interventions is not a power function. It's done by provincial government. We therefore have no control on what skills transfer takes place during that process. But certainly our view is that if we are given an opportunity to be part of that process, certainly it would be one of the areas we would ensure that at least when the intervention comes to the next, that the municipality can continue because the appropriate skills would have been transferred to those that are there, or necessary appointments would have been made such that the function can then be delivered on a daily basis. Captain, let me stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DJ.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, with your permission, I'll make a couple of comments, and then I would appreciate if you can allow the other comments, the other colleagues of mine also just to come in very, very briefly. We'll be very short and to the point. There was a question on whether we need to indicate the kind of capacity that is required by different spheres of government, including districts and SAUGA, to provide their support to municipalities. I think, Chairperson, this is an issue that we would agree probably needs more attention. But in the local government turnaround strategy and in the delivery agreement that that we have signed with MECs and municipalities, we are beginning to deal with that issue, but I think probably not to the extent that the way in which it's coming up in this meeting. So I'm simply saying, Chairperson, that this is the area where we need to kind of do some more work. There was another very specific question asked by the Honourable Sonoli about the role of districts and whether they have played their legislative role in terms of support. 14 municipalities. Again, we have done some work on this when we did an assessment of local government, when we did a review. And clearly, I mean, the answer to that question is very uneven. In many instances, we believe that districts have not played that role. But then I think there was another more important question that was also asked, is again, what kind of support was provided by national and provincial government to districts? And again, Chairperson, the response to that is again probably uneven. On the one hand, we can say we have provided support. There have been various grants that have been, that we've tried to channel through districts. We had the RAC levy, and that was taken away, but replaced with something else. There are issues around assignment of different functions, like the water in particular. So I'm saying that the answer to that question is definitely uneven, and it's something that we need to factor into the debate as we discuss the future of district municipalities going forward. But I think we would definitely argue to say that we have played some role, but probably in retrospect, there could have been a much more targeted support role by national and provincial government to districts. But I think the other important point that we must not lose in this discussion, and it came out very clearly within our presentation, it did not necessarily come out as clearly in other presentations, is that the Constitution makes it very clear that the obligation around capacity is an obligation for a municipality itself in the first instance to address. So in the first instance, they must take the appropriate measures to position themselves and to capacitate themselves. And we're making this point quite strongly because we think in many instances that is not necessarily the case. That, of course, does not in any way detract from Section 154, that talks about the mandatory requirement for national and provincial government to support districts and locals and metros. Chairperson, on the question around political infighting, again, we can go back to our database and we can provide some of the very specific reasons that we have that speaks to some of the interventions and how politics at the local level, both within political parties and between political parties that have played themselves out. If you look at some of the reports that we got around Overberg, for example, and what happened there, again, I mean, there were clearly issues happening within the council that contributed to that. Also, if you look at Kokama, I mean, I've had a number of meetings with the mayor there. Again, there are issues within the political party. It's not necessarily a chairperson, or it's not easy as an official to begin to elaborate on those things. I think there's nothing wrong this forum requesting MECs and mayors to come and account here and to explain some of these things. But our observation is that clearly we have a certain information that points to the failure of municipalities and what has contributed to some of these interventions, chairperson. Chairperson, we'll both look at the issue of Sunday's River. It was raised by yourself. It was also raised in the discussion and the issue of resources. We will take up that discussion both with the province and look at the municipality. The issue of Limpopo is, again, it's probably one that maybe we need to look at a little bit more closely, and maybe my colleague wants to comment on that. But there are a number of general comments we can make here. On the one hand, I think definitely it's a decision that the political executive takes at the provincial level in terms of how they want to interact with municipalities in the province, and that's a political decision that they take. That's one issue. And linked to that, we would also agree that there definitely are problems in that province with municipalities. So when we give a statistic that says there have been no interventions, we are not saying that there are no problems in that province. I mean, we have an official in our department, or we have two or three officials that we send to different provinces to deal with one or two problems. And at least once a month, this official goes to Limpopo to receive a grievance and to deal with a particular problem in that province, in one or two municipalities. So I'm simply saying that we are not giving an impression that there are no problems there, and I think we probably need a little bit more of a detailed discussion on what is unique and why they've not applied or invoked Section 139. Linked to that was the question of how we can apply Section 139 consistently. I think this is precisely the argument we made here today, and I think many other members, including yourself, Chairperson, maybe have made this argument. We are saying the time has now arrived for us to put legislation on the table that begins to deal with some of the areas a little bit more clearly and a little bit more explicitly. If you look at our presentation from slide 16 onwards, those are the areas we are beginning to identify that hopefully will lead to a much more consistent legal application or application in law of Section 139. I'm not sure whether that is sufficient, but that is clearly one response to that particular question, Chair. Again, a very difficult question. Why are we not invoking Section 100? What we can do is to explain to the workshop what the other things that we are doing. We are doing a range of other things. We are sending letters from our minister to MECs, asking them to take action. At my level as a DG, I'm interacting with the heads of departments. So definitely we are doing a range of things to get our provinces to play a much more proactive role. And then, of course, we must say also to this workshop that we have undertaken an assessment of the provincial departments of local government, and we think we know what the problems are. So when our minister says that in general there is no support, that the support is inadequate, this is based on a very thorough study that we have done a year or two ago, and we think that not much has changed and that remains the case. Going forward, Chairperson, there are a number of things that we intend to do differently. One of those things includes the fact that the national department, we are going to establish regional or provincial offices of the national cooperative department and the Department of Cooperative Governance. And one of the reasons for establishing those provincial offices is precisely to work and complement the work of our provincial colleagues much more in terms of getting them to play their kind of support role. So that is just one of the things that we'll be doing going forward. Chairperson, let me just conclude from my side that on the issue of Mbalabala, for example, I think that is something that we will also follow up with the Treasury. And I think many of the other comments we will note, and we will build that into our discussion and as we work on the draft legislation before it comes to the South. Thanks.
Thank you very much for input. I said I will allow for another follow-up 2 to 3 minutes.
I was making an appeal. Obviously, you can decide. I would say if you can allow my colleague just to make short comments as well, with your permission. Thank you.
Thank you very much. One or two comments. I think the DG has covered much on the comments. Suffice to say, as I did explain, that this issue around Section 139.15 of the Constitution, which just deals only with 7 days, it mentions that and that's it. As I did indicate, Chair, we are working within the confines of the constitutional prescript, and that's what the executive has required us to do. This is but one of probably the challenges that are there. But we can engage as to how to also relook the whole of this constitutional prescript. But where I'm sitting, Chair, as a technocrat, obviously I wouldn't be able to take that decision. The other issue around the governance, the slide 10, governance, finance, and service delivery, you'll appreciate, Chair, that this information also, the information that we're extrapolated from the reports that were sent by the provinces when they were requesting approval of intervention, the very same report that has been sent to the NCOP. Now, for us, we just made broadly categorize them into this aspect, but we can compile a nice report out of what we know or we have. Suffice to say, the issue also on the infighting by political, obviously the infighting paralyzes the working of the council and probable administration to such an extent that the invocation of Section 139 is required. And the issue of the municipal managers when the intervention are being invoked, by and large, in majority of them, it's either the municipal managers have been suspended or they are not there, the post is vacant. Very few of them, you'll find the municipal managers being in place. But under normal circumstances, we would allow for the administrators to
incapacitate the municipal managers as and when they pull out of the intervention chair. I think those are the issues from my side. Otherwise, the DG has covered everything. Suffice to say, Chair, what we did was not a fully blown analysis of the interventions themselves. They were done according to the report. Now, my last point on the issue of whether a single directive was sent in Limpopo, we are not too sure of that, Chair, given the reason that the constitution doesn't require a provincial government to table that a directive that was issued to the municipality to the minister. Also, around this issue of a consistency of the application of section. You see, for example, in Abakulusi municipality in the KZN and Amajuba, other mechanisms such as court actions were utilized where, in for instance, the council refused to access specific particular individual appointed by a political party for a proportional representation. Now, they wanted to institute Section 139, of which Section 139 in this regard was not applicable. It's not applicable in terms of principle. So, at the end of the day, the minister would refuse permission to apply Section 139, but would say, advise you to go to court to resolve, or other means. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I give you honorable chance, I just want to throw something that you must go and research. How and when Section 139, Subsection 7, which give effects to the National Department to intervene, especially maybe can address certain things where in a particular province is not sort of acting, but yet the report was saying in that municipality there is a paralysis. I think if we could look into that as to move forward with the legislation of them, that should be exploited, because indeed the minister, the constitution does give the minister that leeway in terms of that section, but I think you need to research that one. I think the input that honorable has given is very important. My father, I'm sitting here on the chair, but below this chair there is wealth. How do you know? You know that type of thing. Honorable, sorry for. Yes. No. Yeah, you are there. Let me recognize you as one. Is there any other person so that we close questions? Thank you.
Chair Ngosi Muelo Nongonyana from COPTA and the National Assembly Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity, and thank you very much to the colleagues from the department and SALCA for the valuable input. Mine perhaps may be a rhetoric question. They may not answer it. You know, Chair, the reports that have been given give us that there are problems. And these problems continue. But I have no doubt in my mind that both the local sphere of government, provincial and national, have done something really to address this mischief. And I have no doubt in my mind that they have been honest, they are doing everything possible. I can dare say that at the time there were scorpions, they were involved. And they came and gone. And the hawks are there. They're doing everything possible. Any of our people, they do actually report these things, and they are killed, and police are actually killing these things. Does that not tell us, therefore, that there's nothing fundamental here in the system itself? You see? Can't we have a real look into the system itself of governance at that level? Well, I may be subjective here, Chair, but my political partner must have with me as well. I mean, not be politically correct. The issue of this system of governance, constitution that we're talking about, and the fact that there's been some debate about the role of the institution of traditional leadership, for instance, in this thing, because certain other municipalities, whether we like it or not, where the municipalities were established by the colonialists at the time, it was at the expense of the traditional community. You see? And they've got some things in many municipalities, you can go around the country. They've got some monuments there, having the names of those people who maimed and killed and disfigured our people. What I'm trying to say is that, can't we then have a real look into the system, again, as part of uprooting this mischief? That was the rhetorical question that I was saying I was going to impose, that I'm not insisting. They must respond now, I mean, say chair, they may actually also conceal and mull over this thing, and we from our side as well as members will mull over this thing with a view to find a system that will have no grounds for these white collar criminals and system, because local government is in the mercy of these clever criminals that are. Some of them, yes, they have not been found, but some of them, they have been found. But these things continue to exist, and they affect service delivery, unfortunately. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for... It's fortunate that the question is rhetoric. And in our select and portfolio committee, we must research a rhetoric answer together. Thank you very much. That concludes the clarification question. However, there is a question that was asked by the Honorable, that what do we do when you fight political insight at that point? When the committee goes to oversight, it's constituted by multi-party delegation. And you can't deal with that type of a question at that time. When we were in KZN, to say as an example, ISP-led municipality, where you found a political insight, the delegates of that party would take the matter to the party, not us, because it's not going to be possible to deal with that one, at that level, especially when you are in parliament. I think that is how we approach it. And even other parties who are part of the delegation, they will take it to their various political parties, if it affects them. That's how we dealt with them. But I think to conclude, my colleague from Senegal, because I'm also from Senegal, one would make an appeal. In most cases, when we go out, we invite Senegal in various provinces. They confirm, but very few provinces they do attend. And when they attend, you find that they send junior officials who doesn't have a political executive authority to engage, and would want to say, indeed, if that could be improved, and especially at other level, at the level of select committee, where we have in committee meeting here, still we see something at official capacity level, but at political capacity level, it needs to be addressed, so that when we table an issue, it has got an expression of something that we do, but attendance, but I understand that the full timeness and whatever must be quickly addressed at that level. It will assist that participation. In terms of way forward, I think there is general consensus that indeed we need a uniform approach on this matter. And we are told by the department that they are busy, especially with the issue that relates to Section 139, Subsection 8, that there is work that is being done. Maybe one would say it should be speeded up so that both houses, select committees, both houses are able to deal with that matter quickly, precisely because our experience down there really tells us that there is a need for a uniform approach. And the fact that some of the interventions are discretionary, you may not necessarily blame the provinces as they are heterogeneous in their approach. And therefore it's important that we need to speed that matter up. The other issue is this issue of provincial legislature. While we may not wait for whatever capacity provincial legislators, I think the chairperson, as they go back, we need to get a way of communicating, because that is not illegal. To say, for example, we go to Zela Vela and we are able to communicate with provincial legislator, the relevant committee, go with the SOP, then whatever will be remaining, which is a challenge to province, the provincial legislature will remain making follow-up there, while the SOP will follow its constitutional obligation of expressing approval or disapproval. I think this, we may not wait for a particular law to do that. In terms of spirit of cooperative governance, we can do it even now if we're going somewhere. I'm giving an example that as chairperson, that must be happening. I think the other thing is that the discussion that we have, recommendations, we need to send them to all premises. We need to class them as a committee correctly and send them to the provinces, especially where some of the provinces could not attend, so that we add up this issue of joint overseeing this type of intervention. The other thing that we need to, I think it's a consensus also, it's a question of emphasizing support initially before even the intervention can be implemented. But now we are talking at level of legislature here. This one we were supposed to be speaking with the executive authorities, various executive authorities. Maybe we'd recommend to the department that if there can be a meeting of the department calling on the portfolio committee, select committee with the MEC, precisely because the practical application is done by the executive authorities, wherein together we have that spirit of understanding that indeed it will be fine. Section 1391A is exhausted. Before you can even go to 1B, etc. I think that approach may also assist. I know that there are a lot of programs, but I think if the department could take it up, arrange that type of a meeting, even if it might not take the whole day, just to lay the principles in terms of this one, that would assist a lot. I think these other many issues can be solved once we have that legislation in place, where you are able to make inputs, where you are able to make consultation. We make those inputs to strengthen the approach. Generally, it is true that I'm not defending any other province, but the practice all over the country is that there are problems. Not excluding them, but there are problems. And therefore, the general approach is that we need a common approach on how do we deal with it. The point of the census is having to apply the very same section 154. To what extent do we apply it? At legislative level, we'll only do oversight, but we may not ourselves apply. And therefore, it's important that this workshop, to me, it has laid a foundation that would say the next step, as we meet, it should be more inclusive, wherein after we shall have met with executive authorities, then we met as both executive authorities and legislature to have a way forward so that we have a common approach on this issue. I think our officials have captured all those things that are common and they have concerns, that we need to work on them and find a way as a committee. The other issue is the portfolio committee. Maybe usually when we go to intervention, the SOP is dictated upon by constitution, which is not including the portfolio committee.
But I don't believe at the level of political relations, if there is a delegate that would want to go just to see, to participate in whatever, that cannot be stopped because, well, emphasize in collaboration and joint effort. That I think you are welcome. But when we come to process issues, we will be the NCP alone because of constitutional obligations. And I think that would have to be well understood. I think let me take this opportunity to indeed thank everyone who participated. Those who presented, we thank you very much. Bindera, I think you will iron up certain things and let's see what we have agreed and take it forward. Let me thank the provincial chairperson. Thank you very much for coming. And we hope that we would coordinate in such a way that next time, because we need to come back again, all provinces are present. And we have realized that this intervention impacts much on service delivery. Together we need to do more to ensure that our people receive service delivery. Thank you, Body Voyage. Is there food?
The lunch we serve is 19th Street.